Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here. You need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome to another edition of the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. I'm your host, Neil McCready. Today on the show, we are going to talk National Football League with Neil Stratton of Inside the League. A lot of spring NFL meetings, also free agency, and the NFL draft, which is not that far away now, about 4 weeks until the draft. So we'll talk about all of those topics and more with Neil Stratton. First, let me tell you about the Oxford Crystal. It's on Highway 6 West, right next to the Oxford Exxon. You can stop in both places. You can fill up the car at the Oxford Exxon and then head over to the Oxford Crystal and get everything you're looking for. Right now, you can enter for a chance to win a grand prize Golden Isles getaway to the King and Prince Resort. And then there's the food, of course. That's the big reason to go, of course. 10 crystals, 10 wings, $10 all day at the Oxford Crystal. You can get the bigger breakfast combo that now includes French toast sticks. That's the fresh cracked eggs, none of that powder stuff there, Crystal. You get the heads or tails combo, the double dozen combo, 24 shrimp, medium fry, and a drink, or the surf and turf combo, 12 shrimp, two crystals, medium fry, and a drink. And then, of course, the mix five for $5, now featuring the shrimp po' boy. All of that at the Oxford Crystal, the happy hour, 59-cent ices, 59-cent crystals. Now that it's getting warmer outside, that 59-cent icy is an even better bargain. So all that at the Oxford Crystal. We're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. We've been telling you about Clark Ford for a while, but give Corey Clark and the guys at Clark Ford a try. Corey has saved listeners of this podcast from Dallas, Cape Girardeau, Biloxi, and all over the South the hassles of the everyday car buying experience. So you can take advantage of that as well. And to prove it, he's offering $500 additional savings on anything on their lot when you work your best deal and then mention the podcast at the end of the negotiation. He'll cut $500 off. Just simply cut your deal, tell Corey what you're looking for, cut your deal, and then at the end of that, say, hey, I heard about Clark Ford on the Beer Garden podcast, on the Oxford Exxon podcast. Either way, it works, and he will take you'll take $500 off the deal that you have negotiated. So it's that simple at Clark Ford, 662-257-1900, 662-257-1900, or clarkfordinc.com. The podcast also brought to you by Strategic Partners in Media. It's a full-service advertising and public relations firm doing business throughout the country. SPM works with companies of all sizes, from Fortune 500 companies to local startups. Their logic is simple. They find a way to tell a story about their client that captivates an audience that eventually does business with the client. SPM focuses first and foremost on developing a winning and unique strategy for their clients, whether that is through creating and implementing an aggressive digital and social media plan, producing a captivating television advertisement, or crafting a corporate communications plan to get any business through good or bad times. SPM always finds the right path forward. SPM mastered their craft in the rough and tough political advertising world. They bring to the table decades of advertising experience, plus a unique perspective to advertising and a tireless work ethic rooted in their days of nonstop campaigns. To reach them, email Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. Again, Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. Now let's get into some NFL talk with Neil Stratton of Inside the League. All right, Neil, I really appreciate you being with me here on a taping this, I guess, on a Wednesday morning. It'll probably be published on Thursday morning, so thanks for your time.
My pleasure as always, Neil. It's always a lot of fun, man.
So you guys are getting beat up with the storm right now that's supposed to come here tomorrow. I'll be honest, I live in a neighborhood that for whatever reason is basically Tornado Alley in in Oxford. Anytime people start using the word tornado, my next door neighbor has one of those tornado shelters, the whole deal. Every time I hear the word tornado, I'm petrified.
We don't get a lot of experience in that here in Houston. We get a lot of rain and a good bit of wind, but tornadoes are kind of alien. I haven't heard anything about that, but I can't it wouldn't surprise me. It's looking pretty bleak out there right now.
Okay, so the NFL had their meetings. The free agent signing period and stuff's going on. Everybody's getting ready for the draft. There's still a lot of topics. We'll get to some of them. We probably won't touch them all. We'll get to a few here in the next half hour or so. I'm curious, who signs first in your opinion, Adrian Peterson or Colin Kaepernick, and why are both having so much trouble getting signed?
Well, you know how it goes. It's overvaluing, or I guess maybe not reading the market correctly, and maybe a little bit of ego, and maybe a little bit of just wanting a little bit too much money. Both of these guys 5 years ago were two of the hotter talents in the league, but it's not 2012 anymore. Boy, which one gets signed first? Good question. I guess I'd say Peterson. I think he's probably going to be more open, I would say, to approve a kind of deal, I think, because he's going to have to, given the fact that he's broken down so much over the last few years and just has struggled to stay on the field. I think he's got to read the signs and recognize that this is not the NFL of 10 years ago when you were looking for one bell cow and one guy that was going to rock it between the tackles every play and get 30 carries. I think he's got to accept that he's now a complimentary back and maybe one of the better ones out there. But if he's serious about wanting to win a championship, he's going to have to maybe drop his demands a little bit. The good thing for Peterson, obviously, is he doesn't come with all the excess baggage that Colin Kaepernick comes with. And he's been working pretty hard, obviously, to try to walk all the negativity back and kind of dial back the off-field issues and the political, perhaps, concerns that teams might have about him. But I think there are other issues that have to do with his play and, lack of performance over the last few years, in addition to the fact that, as you alluded, to his salary concerns. So my money would be on Peterson, maybe going somewhere and signing a one-year deal. Kaepernick's going to be a little bit harder sell, if you ask me.
Here's what bothers me about the Peterson thing. Specifically, it's kind of the New York Giants, right? A team that needs a running back. They have a veteran quarterback. They're going for it. They've made some moves offensively to bolster their wide receiver core. You know you need a running back. And when the excuse given for, well, we can't go down that path is because of his domestic violence things in the past.
Yeah.
If I'm a Giants fan, I'm irritated because that comes 1 year after the Giants passed on Laremy Tunsil because of the marijuana video and stuff. And when Laremy Tunsil would have made a ton more sense for that team a year ago than Eli Apple did.
Yeah, you're right. The thing about it is you can take this domestic violence stuff. I don't mean to minimize it, obviously.
No, of course not.
It's like there's always a ready excuse if you don't want to go in a direction. You can always say, well, he's got that domestic violence thing, and then that kind of washes all concerns away. At some point, number one, doesn't anyone get forgiven anymore? And number two, how long do you continue to bring that back in and say, well, that's our big concern? I mean, I just don't know if that continues to be the big marker that a lot of people would make it out to be.
With Kaepernick, is it on the field or off the field that's killing him? See, I think it's on the field. I think he's not produced when he's had opportunities. I think there's always a team out there that would say, if that quarterback could win games for me, I'll deal with this national anthem stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's off the field. I mean, they'd find a way. And again, listen, I think he's made a genuine effort. I think he's put a lot of money where his mouth is and has helped some people that wouldn't have gotten help, and maybe it's genuine, maybe it's not. But ultimately, here's a guy who hasn't been that disciplined the last few years and has failed to win a job over Blaine Gabbert, decisively, and was given a lot of weapons for a while. And I'm not certainly not going to say that the 49ers are a picture-perfect offense, and they've got a lot of different issues, but for the most part, they've had a good, solid back in the backfield, and it just hasn't happened for Kaepernick. I mean, I think Kaepernick, again, 4 or 5 years ago, was looked at as one of the brightest young stars in the game, and now he's really kind of at loose ends. I think you're absolutely right. It's look at what he's put on tape the last two or three years. Look at the what he's done on the field. It hasn't happened. And, you know, now people are, I think there's an expectation, maybe a perception, that he wants to come in and start, at least compete to start. He certainly at least seems to want starter money in the 8, 9, 10 million a year range. Who's going to commit that much of their cap to a guy that is a major question mark on the field? Forget about the off the field. And, I just don't know if he, despite his immense physical gifts and his athleticism, there are certainly question marks about what he's really going to be able to provide for that money. So I think you're right. I think it is mostly on the field. It doesn't hurt about the other stuff, but it's definitely mostly on the field.
There in your state of Texas, it's a lot of talk, I'm sure, about Tony Romo. Yesterday, Jerry Jones comes out on Tuesday, says that the Tony Romo deadline is training camp. Says they've spoken in the last couple of days. He's doing great, has options. I know it's not the Cowboys' job to help other organizations. I get it. Romo's been a pretty good soldier for them, though, and handled the quarterback thing, at least publicly last year, as well as it possibly could have been handled. And he wants out. Dak Prescott appears to be the quarterback. What am I missing here? If Dak's my quarterback, I don't really want Tony Romo around. Nothing against Tony Romo, right. But I don't want there to be a distraction. I don't want that to be looming in anyone's mind. Is it possible that everyone's missing this and the Cowboys aren't completely sold on the idea of moving past Tony Romo?
Well, it's an interesting thought, and I guess I can't rule it out. But
I'm wrong when I say that. I'm starting to wonder, like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, I think Jerry Jones is playing poker with the NFL, and he knows, really, look, there's two markets for Tony Romo. Romo does not want to come back to be a backup. So he's got two options, really. That's Houston and Denver. Both teams are not, at this point, looking to pay whatever the Cowboys' price is. So they're going to wait around and act like there's nothing going on. Draft day is when all this is going to happen. I mean, we're still about a month away from the draft, and so there's no – Jerry Jones loses nothing by talking and acting like everything's cool and what, I'm going to do something with Tony Romo? No, he's happy here. We love having him here. I don't think he lasts past draft day anyway. No way, no how. But for right now, there's no reason for them to be in any hurry. I mean, I think the media is in a big hurry. Everyone wants to kind of stoke the storylines and all those kind of things, and I get it. But there's no reason for them to cut him. I mean, it would be a nice gesture. Obviously, Romo was a very good soldier for him last year, and he's a class individual. But I don't think there's any reason for them not to try to get some value back, and I don't blame him for that. I mean, there's no way, though, Neil, no way that they go to camp with Tony Romo. No way. And, I mean, look, he's got off-field offers. He's going to step into a broadcast role at some point. If it turns out that Jones completely overplays his hand and decides he's going to hold on to him all summer, then I think that's when Romo does decide, hey, I am going to step away and enough is enough. But I think that, you know, especially if you're the Texans, look, J.J. Watt's coming off a major injury. You've got some nice players, but you definitely have a hole at quarterback. You got to do something. I don't think that Bill O'Brien wants to be held over a barrel, but at the same time, he's got to do what he's got to do. One of these, I mean, at some point, I think the Texans or the Broncos, and probably the Texans, are going to step up and make something happen. It's just Jones is kind of twisting the knife a little bit and, you know, making it a little harder, maybe a little bit more uncomfortable for him. But 4 weeks, no way. No way he's on this team after 4 weeks, in my opinion.
A healthy Tony Romo does what to the Houston Texans?
Well, I think it guarantees them a division title, and I think it guarantees them a playoff berth, but I'm reluctant to install them as the Super Bowl favorites. I don't know how you feel about that. You know, he's a good player, but he's one good shot away from being out the rest of the season. And I like the offensive line that the Texans put together, but I don't love it. And you know, I think any offensive line that Romo goes to coming from Dallas is a step down, and he's proven pretty brittle even behind a pretty good offensive line. So I think I like the Texans on paper if they've got Tony Romo under center, but I certainly don't run off half-cocked and call them, you know, the AFC champs to beat.
New England's still in the AFC, right?
Exactly.
They stayed in?
But it's going to be so exciting. It's going to be such an awesome storyline, and everyone's going to be like, oh, wow, they had one missing piece, and now he's there, and man, this is going to be such a great thing, you know? Believe me, there's excitement here. I'm in Houston. I hear it all the time.
Yeah.
But they
need New England to switch conferences.
That would help. I mean, listen, I like Romo. I think he's still got gas in the tank. It's not unlimited, and we've seen how brittle he's been. And that's a major consideration.
What did you think of the Stephon Gilmore signing with the Patriots?
I thought it was shocking. You know, it's like they're playing chicken with Malcolm Butler, and I think that Gilmore is a nice player. I'm not necessarily sold on him as a big-time, you know, one of the first signings a free agency kind of guy. Maybe I'm in the minority there, but I didn't see that. That's where the Patriots were going to focus their resources right off the bat. Now, Bill Belichick's a lot smarter than I am, but that caught me a little off guard.
What do you think ultimately happens with Butler?
Boy, that's one I've really gone back and forth on.
Yeah, it's weird.
As a Saints guy, it's exciting because, you know, here's the thing. I have been expecting Sean Payton to leave in the offseason for the last 2 years. And I think Sean Payton was thinking he was going to leave in the offseason for the last 2 years. Now that he has signed this big new deal and looks like he's going to be around for a while, it looks like, I hate to say this, he's trying again. It looks like he's really trying to put all his eggs in the Saints basket and trying to build up their defense and trying to do things right. So I applaud Payton and Loomis for trying to seriously improve their secondary, which obviously needs help. However, as a Saints guy, I am hideously remember. I mean, I still wake up in a cold sweat thinking of Jason David and Jairus Byrd and Brandon Browner and the ghost of Saints defensive back free agent signings past that completely blew up in their face. And the thing that I can't get past, Neil, and I think this is a bigger consideration than maybe is discussed a lot, how's a guy that wasn't even an undrafted free agent signing, he was a tryout guy that came in, ran a 40, did well enough on the 40, they brought him in on a tryout, goes. Then he gets a contract to be an undrafted free agent, then makes the team, then becomes a starter. I mean, this guy came from nowhere to now he's on the lip of making real money. No, this is no knock on Malcolm Butler, but he is a human being. And human nature is when you go from making league minimum to 13, 14, 15 a year, do you still really bust it the same way you did? And the Saints have a record of signing all these guys that were exactly in that situation, and it didn't work out so perfectly for them. Meanwhile, you have a draft that is pretty deep with cornerbacks, and they've got two picks, 11 and 32. Conceivably, they could take two cornerbacks, and hopefully they'd take a pass rusher and cornerback, and hopefully they don't take Pat Mahomes at 32, which is what I expect them to do. But they could really get rich with corners in a pretty good draft for corners without signing this guy and, you know, making a major commitment cap-wise and, oh, by the way, perhaps burning the crap out of themselves the way they have so many times in the past. So with all that said, I think the ship has sailed on Butler. I think that the Patriots are overplaying their hand a little bit. They're trying to get that 11. I don't think the Saints want to do that. Again, I think that's smart. Ultimately, I think Butler comes back to New England. But you know, I'm 90% on that. I'm not 100% on that. It could still happen. It seems like based on what Loomis said at the NFL meetings, there's still a fire burning for Butler. I don't know why he would continue to go down that path if there weren't something to that, because I don't think he necessarily gains that anything. I don't know if they're selling tickets by talking about Malcolm Butler or not.
What did you make of the Brandon Cooks trade from the Saints to the Patriots?
You know, the Saints know that as long as they have one of the top two or three quarterbacks in the NFL, for my money, throwing the passes, their wide receiver and tight end core is pretty much funny money. What is this, 3 years in a row that they've, maybe not 3 years in a row, but Sproles, Graham, and now Cooks, that they have used, they've dealt from their strengths in the receiving core to try to shore up other areas. I hate to lose a player like Brandon Cooks, but I think that they've patched the hole to some degree with Ted Ginn, and ultimately I think as long as Drew Brees is there, you can almost throw three receivers and a tight end and a running back out there, and he's going to make, chicken feathers into chicken salad. I think Brees is a special player, and not just on the field, but off the field. And it pains me to see a guy like Cooks, who is a burner and has been very effective for the Saints. It pains me to see them leave. I especially hate to see him go to New England, but they've proven that they can lose these guys and find someone else to replace them. I mean, look at Willie Snead, Neil. Here's a guy that wasn't good enough for the Cleveland Browns, who don't have anyone catching the ball. He comes to New Orleans, and 2 years in a row, he's got, 1,800 yards receiving over two seasons? Has threatened for 1,000 yards both years? It's amazing.
Yeah, it is. And you're right about Brees. On the field, he's been fantastic. Off the field, he remains to this day the most professional player I've ever covered.
Oh, man.
When I covered the Saints kind of as a part-time beat writer, he was just he's a gem. I mean, he's he's fantastic. All right, let's talk about this with the Saints a little bit, because, I mean, obviously Drew Brees, he's beaten a lot of things. He won't beat Father Time. Nobody ever does. I mean, even Michael Jordan lost out to Father Time. So, I mean, it's going to happen. Sean Payton spent some time with Johnny Manziel. He's kind of downplayed it. Would Manziel be a good fit in New Orleans?
I think Manziel's a good fit in New Orleans because he's gotten, you got to keep your thumb on Johnny Manziel, all right? Manziel's at a point in his career where he has nothing. Anything that he gets, any chance he has to go back to the NFL is a big plus. I think if you sell Manziel as a guy who's a potential gadget player as well as a backup quarterback and a guy that's learning, still learning, and comes in as a number three, not the backup. I mean, the backup to the backup, really, if you ask me. And maybe a guy that you split out and put in the slot or do some fun things with and bring in on a veteran minimum contract, I think he could be very interesting. The key is you've got to set expectations with Manziel. If he comes in thinking he's the next guy after Drew retires, I think that you've done things all completely wrong. But again, if you keep him on a short leash and he understands to the degree that Johnny Manziel can understand anything, that he's just there and it's very tentative and he could be cut at any time, I think he could be an interesting guy to sign. But again, you got to make sure he's in the right frame of mind. You got to make sure he's clean. You got to make sure he's focused on the game. And who's to say if that's the case or not, Neil? Who's to say?
Your opinion, does he play again anywhere?
Probably not. I mean, I thought there was a chance with New Orleans. But based on what I've heard, there's not interest anymore. And if not New Orleans, I don't know. Again, I know that Johnny Manziel would love to go to Dallas, and that's wonderful. And I guess if Tony Romo, when and if Tony Romo gets dealt, maybe there's some synergy there. And I know that Jerry Jones is always looking to sell tickets. I would say there's a 5% chance he goes to Dallas. If he doesn't go to Dallas, I think he's done.
Yeah, and if I'm Dallas, I don't know that that's what I want behind Dak. I want a veteran.
Good point.
I want a veteran who can help him in the film room, a veteran who he can consult on the sidelines. I want and a veteran who has no aspirations of being the starter, of winning the job, who goes in going, hey, I'm the backup. I'm the emergency guy. I'm here to help this kid. And Dak's still a kid. I don't want a distraction in that locker room. Like Manziel would be a distraction in the locker room.
Sure.
Might as well bring in Tebow at that point.
Absolutely. And again, you've got to establish he's not number two. He's number three.
Yeah, but the media would still make it a monster big deal.
Yeah,
I mean, especially in that state where he played college football, and I just if I'm the Cowboys, that's not what I want around Prescott. I want an older guy, a guy who used to be a starter, who's now established as a backup, who's a professional guy, who's going to be in that meeting room with him, in the film room with him, who can be basically another coach.
You know, you're describing Tony Romo right now. Isn't that funny?
It is.
If it weren't for the way the situation has developed, he'd be a perfect guy. But, you know, obviously that's not going to happen.
I think the difference would be that if you asked Tony Romo, are you a starting quarterback today,
good point.
He would say, yeah, I'm a starter.
Good point. Good point. Very good point.
Every once in a while, man. every so often. All right, we're 29 days away from the draft. Let's flip to the draft a little bit because obviously a lot's going to happen. All right, who's the first running back off the board? Is it Dalvin Cook? Is it Leonard Fournette? And then along those lines, if Joe Mixon didn't have the off the field issues, if that video didn't exist, where would he go in this draft? Would he go ahead of both of those guys?
I think Fournette has really established himself as the number one running back in this class. He really impressed me running, you know, 4.5s. He's a big boy, and he still ran a solid, really solid at the combine. I don't think he's done anything to jeopardize the fact that he's the number one running back in the class. I think he's really, you know, cemented that. Cook is a guy, it seems like every day there's a new red flag. I've heard he's got issues with his shoulders. There are some off-the-field issues. Fortunately for Cook, they weren't captured on videotape.
Yep.
But Mixon is a guy who, boy, the needle's certainly pointing up for him. I think if there's no videotape, then Mixon's a first-rounder. I don't think many people would argue with that. As it stands, I think he's got an excellent chance to go top 100, and you know the videotape's pretty strong, and you've got to have to brace yourself for what's ahead from the protest groups and what have you. And again, let me say this because it bears saying, I'm not excusing Joe Mixon for what he did. Certainly, it's
no, not at all. I'm
horrifying.
I'm with you completely. I mean, but he, I'm not. I will never defend it, ever, because it's awful.
No,
it's one of the worst things I've ever seen, and and I don't frankly believe that he served enough of a punishment. That being
nor do I.
That being said, he went through a legal process.
Mm-hmm.
Did he get some advantages? Yeah, he did. But that's more on the people who gave him the advantages than on him. He served his penance. His reputation has certainly taken a permanent hit, as it deserved to be.
Right.
But if you're in the NFL, you're looking for an impact running back, and I'm with you, man. If I can't have Fournette, I just know how fans are. I mean, I'll give you an example. I'm a Cubs fan. Been a Cubs fan all my life.
Sure.
The Cubs trade for Aroldis Chapman back in July, and I was like, man, on this team full of what appears to be basically good guys, you know, Chris Bryant seems like a really good guy. Anthony Rizzo's a good guy. Kyle Schwarber's a good guy. Addison Russell's a good guy, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I'm sure they have flaws, but they seem like good guys.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to bring in a guy that did what Aroldis Chapman did, that threatened his girlfriend or wife or whatever at gunpoint, and why are you doing this?
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, man. When he was slamming the door on the Dodgers in the National League Championship Series, I was calling him Chappie.
it does seem to resolve itself pretty quickly in the heat of battle.
It does, and so when it's Sunday afternoon and you need somebody out of the backfield to make a play, I know what everyone says, but the 65,000 in the stands just want the play to get made.
Of course.
If I'm an NFL team, I get it, but I have to be careful that I don't overthink this and that I have to remind myself that I'm not running a church. I'm not running a Boy Scout group. I'm running a football team, and can this guy help me win? And I think the answer with Joe Mixon is, yeah, he can help you win.
You better believe it. You better believe it. I mean, the thing about Mixon, there's so many interesting running backs, and it's obviously a very deep running back class, but as a complete back who's got size and can, you know, can carry the ball 25 times and catch the ball a little bit and do all those things, he's probably had a Cook. He's probably had a McCaffrey. He's probably had a Kamara. Foreman, I think, may be the second running back selected now. He had a nice pro day. Ran, I think, he surprised people with his time. But Mixon's right there. He may be number three. Again, there's 32 teams. What do you like? What are you looking for? What are all those kinds of things. McCaffrey's an exciting player, but maybe he's a complimentary player. You know, he's probably not your bell cow kind of back. If you don't like Cook's medicals, or you don't like his off the field, or you don't like anything, whatever about him, do you want to take him that high? The off-the-field issues are real, but Mixon's a talented player. Talented player. And he's not a guy that came out of, East Texas Baptist. He played a Big Ten schedule.
Yeah.
Went to major bowl games, you know.
And he's already
a proven talent.
And he's already done the media stuff with the video.
Absolutely.
It's out. I mean, he's taken his – I mean, he ought to have a pretty refined message on it by now.
One would think.
That's why I think the people that the Laramie Tunsil thing a year ago, I think a lot of teams blew it. They didn't. No one had the ability in those war rooms to say, hey, wait a minute, guys. We're going to take a one-day beating on this. There's a news cycle. It'll pass. We're going to take a one-day beating on this. And then it'll be over and we have our left tackle.
It's so funny, Neil. It's so funny. That exact thinking, but that scared off, what, 16 teams?
It did.
I'm not saying he would have been the first pick in the draft necessarily, but how many teams panicked and said, oh, my gosh, we can't touch him?
He was going to be He was going to be the first lineman taken in the draft.
And instead,
instead he was, the fourth? I mean, so it scared off multiple teams.
Absolutely. And, I mean, isn't that a little short-sighted?
No, it's not a little short-sighted. It is 1,000% short-sighted.
One would think.
I mean, if he comes to, let's say Laramie Tunsil goes to Miami and immediately produces a rap video of him smoking marijuana. Well, then, yeah, you screwed it up.
Right.
Odds are he's going to come in and work hard because he knows he just got exposed. He knows his margin for error as an NFL player just got reduced. I mean, who won that? The Dolphins or the teams that passed on Tunsil?
Now, I agree with everything you've said. However, there's also an economy of when a player is selected and where they're selected plays into attitude and expectation and all those things. And I'm certainly not going to sit here and say Laramie Tunsil would have come in there and been an Allen Iverson type guy when he got there. But was he on his best behavior more so? Was he more focused on what was going on in the field? Was he able to limit distractions more because he was 17 instead of 3 or 4 or 2? We'll never know. But that's the kind of thing that, to me, makes the draft fascinating. And I think that more than one scout would say it's part of the balance of the draft. And, you know, when a guy is taken in the 5th round, he tends to have a little more of a chip on his shoulder than the guy that goes late 1, mid 2nd, you know?
Sure.
again, I'm not trying to, I'm not taking anything away from Laramie Tunsil whatsoever, but there's, that is just kind of part of the whole answer. It's part of the equation. And again, it's just kind of what makes this all pretty fun.
Who's the first quarterback taken? Is it Deshaun Watson? Is it Mitch Trubisky? And then which of those two guys 5 years from now is the better NFL player?
Boy, I don't like Trubisky at all. I mean, he's a one-year wonder, okay? He's David Carr. I don't like these guys that come in out of nowhere and then suddenly everyone falls in love with them and everyone's kind of like, well, you like him too, right? I mean, everyone is, I guess everyone's trying to force a quarterback to be the kind of the guy, and I'm not sure he checks all the boxes. I mean, doesn't play for more than 1 year have to be factored into things? He couldn't be that Marquise Williams, who's on the street right now. I mean, I'm not sold on Trubisky at all. I think it's crazy that people are as high on him as they seem to be. How do you argue with what Deshaun Watson's done? Everyone's trying to pick him apart and all these things, and I'm not necessarily saying he's Andrew Luck, but I like Watson, to me. I mean, he's not a finished product. There's some issues with footwork, what have you. But I still, he's more of a spread quarterback. I get it. There's going to be a longer learning curve. But I'm going to take Watson if I've got to choose one guy who's going to be the man in 5 years.
Myles Garrett's going number one, the defensive end out of A&M. I mean, at Cleveland, I don't even think even the Browns can screw that up. He's the best. He's the best player in the draft, and they've basically said, "Hey, we're not trading the pick. That's what we're going to do."
Right, right.
There's already a difference of opinion, though. Who goes number two with the 49ers? I mean, Solomon Thomas, his name pops up now. There's a difference of opinion at what the Bears do at three. Some people think it's Jamal Adams out of LSU, who I have a serious man crush on and have since he was a high school player. I do. I mean, I was being honest. I mean, it's just I love watching him play. Then people think they'll go corner, go Marshawn Lattimore out of Ohio State, Big Ten connection. I mean, Jonathan Allen could go two. He could go four to the Jags.
Mm-hmm.
What do the Titans do at five? I mean, is there more volatility at the top of this draft? And then I guess I'm asking also along those lines, do you expect there to be trades early in the draft, or do you think there's just a difference of opinion on who takes who early?
Well, the 49ers are such a wild card because they've kind of been, the whole organization's been a wild card for the last 3 or 4 years. And
yeah,
to come, come in and hire a GM who, pull him out of the broadcast booth and basically hire him off a phone call. At least that's a story that has been told and what have you. I don't know. I have no idea what the 49ers are thinking. I think Thomas makes a lot of sense. I mean, they need an impact pass rusher. Allen wouldn't be out of the question, but Thomas seems the one who's most exciting right now, but they could go Lattimore. They could go, Jamal Adams is not a bad idea. So many directions. I know that sounds like I'm bagging out of an answer, but
I don't
have any idea which direction they're going to go right now.
Your Saints have two picks. You mentioned 11 and 32. If the draft goes the way you want it to go for that team, give me some ideas of guys they end up with.
I'd like to see Barnett at 11. I wouldn't be too hurt if Reuben Foster is 11, if he lasts that long. The thing about Foster, he scares me a little bit because I think there's some off-field concerns perhaps, but he's a football player. He's mean. He's angry. Yeah. I mean, the Saints need someone like that in the middle of their defense, and they may need to put up with some of his crap, but they need someone that is just spits fire and can rush the pass if they need to, can step up and at the point of attack, and can even drop back and maybe cover a tight end here and there. It'd be awesome if they get Foster, but if they don't and they get Barnett, that's, I'm okay with that. I've heard, Haason Reddick is one of the fastest risers in the draft right now. I've heard of him at 11. Not as high on him, maybe, but I guess I could be talked into him. What I need to see out of the Saints is a pass rush for 11. I'm going to be really unhappy if they don't do that. They've got to have someone. I don't care if they've got Deion Sanders and, you know, whoever you want back there at cornerback. It doesn't matter if they don't have a pass rush. And I think they've got to get somebody, you know, on the other end from Cameron that can and maybe rush the passer every once in a while. That's what they've got to do. To me, they go defensive end at 11, corner at 32, or flip them if you want to. I really hope they don't take Mahomes. I'm hoping Mahomes isn't around at 32.
But it doesn't make sense, does it? I mean, you have this window with Breeze,
right.
That is barely,
exactly.
It's barely cracked right now.
Right, exactly.
You're all in on Drew Breeze, and I'm with them. If I'm them, I'm all in on Drew Breeze too.
Yeah.
But I'm understanding that 40 isn't far away, and you can't do this forever. I'm using both of those picks and trying to get defensive guys who can impact my team.
You know, they fooled around with Garrett Grayson as a top 100 pick a few years ago, which really still drives me crazy. They've done other things that make me, you know, drive me wild. Just take defense and don't worry about it and just go.
Yeah,
they have to.
I go Barnett or someone along that at 11. And then at 32, I mean, I'm looking at maybe Humphrey from Alabama.
Yeah.
Maybe the I can't pronounce him, the kid from Connecticut, Obi Melifonwu.
Melifonwu, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Really athletic guy, could play safety. I'm doing something along those lines.
Yeah, I could see that. Maybe Tre'Davious White if he lasts.
Yeah. Oh, if he, for sure.
You know, I mean, those guys all make a lot of sense. Maybe they, you know, and I'll tell you another guy to keep an eye on, Jordan Willis. I know the Saints like him. Kansas State pass rusher. A little on the small side, but, boy, he's got a lot of intangibles, and he's surprised a lot of people along the way over the last month or so.
What kind of pro is Leonard Fournette going to be?
I think he can be a good pro. I really do. I think, you know, of course it depends on where he goes, but the thing about Fournette that I'll give him, he came in under great fanfare at LSU. Did he always produce the way that maybe people expected him to? No. Were there injury issues? Yeah. But I think for the most part, no one at LSU says, boy, that guy really disappointed. I think the same will be said when he goes to the NFL. I think he loves to play. I think he's got the skill set. He's got everything he needs. I wouldn't. My stock is high on Leonard Fournette. I think he's going to be a player.
What's the highest he goes? 4?
I don't think the Bears need him. I don't think the 49ers take him.
I mean, it's Jacksonville, right? At 4, it's the earliest he could go?
Yeah, I mean, you never say never, but I think, yeah, probably Jacksonville will be. I don't think the Titans, if he slides past Jacksonville, I could see the Jets, but probably Jacksonville at 4.
You know what's fascinating in this draft is a guy like O.J. Howard, because there's so much tight end depth in the draft.
Right.
Howard, in one mock that I've looked at, goes as high as 6 to the Jets.
Sure.
And in another mock, he goes as low as, what is it, 23, 24 to the Giants. I mean, that is a huge difference in his career between being the 6th pick and the 23rd, 24th pick. That's the potential for the draft being a lot of fun, is a guy like Howard starting to fall. I'm not picking on OJ here, but a guy like him starting to fall and teams going, hey, let's make this happen. Let's go get him now.
Well, you know, the thing about it is when I talk to scouts, they're always come back with, you got to take the best player available. Now, that's scouts thinking. That may not be the executive or the guy that's got to think about, well, we've got to plug this hole, or the, you know, the coach, or the guy saying, well, we got to sell tickets or whatever. They always want to take the best guy. It's going to be a team that listens to its scouts, because Howard is such a great player. Maybe some team takes him that doesn't necessarily have a need, but can't pass on the guy. He's got it all, you know?
Give me a guy in your mind that maybe isn't getting talked about at the very top of the draft who you think is going to be an impact player.
Excuse me. Let's see.
I'll give you mine.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about guys that are not really super sexy, I really like Forrest Lamp out of Western Kentucky. Again, he's an interior lineman, guard center type, but I could see him being a Mangold player who is a stout, one of the best at his position for 10 years. I mean, I think he's a really nice player that not a, a lot of people are talking about.
Yeah, my guy's not as sexy as yours in terms of it being a sleeper. I love Mike Williams, the wide receiver from Clemson.
Sure.
I think he's an impact player in the NFL early, and the whole elite speed thing, maybe he doesn't have elite speed. He's plenty fast. He's going to make plays.
And great size.
Yeah, knows how to get separation, uses his body extremely well.
Mm-hmm. Hands.
Yeah.
Played in a great program. Yeah. I mean, checks all the boxes. Not as sexy because he didn't run that light the lamp kind of 40 that you want. But who cares?
But it's not like with Laquon Treadwell where people said, well, he didn't run the 40. Yeah, but that wasn't the extent of Laquon's problems. There was an injury issue. There were questions about his ability to create separation. I mean, there were other issues with Laquon Treadwell that made him fall in the draft. I don't know that. I mean, Williams, yeah, he didn't run the 4.3 or whatever, but he doesn't have those other issues that Laquon had. Speaking of Laquon Treadwell, what are you expecting year two from him?
Boy.
I mean, it's kind of now or never, isn't it?
Well, one would think. I heard he's, at best right now, he's the number three receiver on the team. And, it doesn't look like Bridgewater's coming back. There's no guarantee he may come back at all. So I guess Bradford's the guy. If he didn't have chemistry at all with Bradford, how does he start the momentum again? I mean, I certainly, it's way too soon to write him off, but he's not my first pick in the fantasy draft this year. That's for sure.
Couple of little wild card things before we stop, if you don't mind. Jay Cutler, is his career over?
No, there's always a need for quarterback. He's just going to have to probably get off the ego a little bit, akin to Kaepernick and Peterson, and settle for a one-year deal.
Last thing. If I tell you you have to predict the Super Bowl for next year right now.
Oh, you're killing me. You're killing me, Neil.
You can't have the Patriots. You can't have the Patriots, and you can't have the Falcons. The two teams that played in it, they're out. You can't pick them. Who's in the Super Bowl?
I got to take the Cowboys. I mean, I really thought, is Dak going to do what he did last year? I don't know. But they're still a solid team. So I'm going to take the Cowboys from the NFC. And I'm going to take the Chiefs from the AFC. I really thought the Chiefs were going to go a little further this year. Maybe they mature past what they did last year. They still got a lot of good parts in place. And I'm higher on Alex Smith than most people tend to be.
Those are good picks. I would have picked out of the AFC until this latest news happened. I would have gone with the Raiders out of the AFC, but now that the whole thing about them moving to Vegas and stuff, I know that doesn't impact the team, but that's going to make for a really weird environment in Oakland the next couple of years.
You're right. I mean, the Raiders are the team that I thought about going with. I went with the Chiefs instead, but, boy, they've got a great quarterback. They've got a lot of good, players in good places. They're young at some good places, but you never know how that's going to affect things, and it may have a serious impact. We'll see.
Well, listen, I really appreciate the time as always. It's fun to catch up with you. I hope the weather, hope it spares you guys today, and I hope it spares us on Thursday, and we can visit again here soon.
Sounds great, Neil. Thanks again. Thanks as always for having me on, buddy.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it. My thanks to Neil for his time today on the Beer Garden Podcast. The Beer Garden brought to you in part by LB's Meat Market, 2008 University Avenue in Oxford, 662-259-2999. It's right across from the Kroger there in Oxford. I said the Kroger. It's just Kroger. When you live here long enough, you say the Kroger. It's a weird thing. Anyway, they've got lunch, catering menu there, lunch specials all day, every day. And then all the fresh cuts. I can't tell you enough. It's the one place in Oxford you can go. You can get that bone-in ribeye that we tell you about. The grade, choice grade Hereford beef. They also have the grass-fed free-range beef from Joyce Farms. All of that at LB's chicken, pork. It's all there. We tell you about the sausages all the time. You should go in and try some. You really should, especially now that it's spring, getting into the kind of the grilling season. Throw some sausages on the grill, open a few beers, and you can't beat it on a Saturday or a Sunday afternoon in this time of the year. They've got the fresh sausages such as the Harvest Apple, the Pork and Green Onion. They've got Boudin, Spicy Italian. They've got the Smoked Sausages, Summer Sausage, Smoked Pork, Smoked Chicken Jalapeno, so much more. They're at LB's. Get in touch with Greg Jones. Tell him what you're looking for. 662-259-2999. And when you go in, they're on the left. They have their beer fridge. Pick six that you like. And when you check out, say, hey, I heard about LB's on the Beer Garden. And that's six beers for $6. Just by saying that, that's at least a $3 savings right there at LB's in Oxford. Podcast also brought to you by Snooze Mattress Company. Snooze, located at 2202 Jackson Avenue West in Oxford. It's the place to go here and around here for all of your bedding needs. Snooze has everything that everything you could be looking for in terms of bedding. They've got Tempur-Pedic, Serta, Jameson, all of those are there. They've also got linens, bed frames, mattress protectors, pillows, all the accessories you might need. They have them there at Snooze. Give Jacob Williams and his team a call, 662-701-5880, or go to their website. It's gosnooze.com. We'll be back hopefully later this week, maybe as early as tomorrow, with another Beer Garden. Going to talk some bartending. Going to talk about the national bartending competition in Las Vegas earlier this week with Jonathan Howard. Maybe have some fun with him. He finished third nationally, which is incredible. It also makes me wonder how good the two people that finished ahead of him must be. Anyway, we'll talk with Jonathan about all of that hopefully later this week. Until then, have a great one.